special by 6 o'clock in the morning when it's still too early to knock. And the dusty light shines down on the block and reflects up and down on the hands of the clock. 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
Morning. Konnichiwa. Hola. Bonjour. Hello. So nice to be with you today. Last night was, it's Earth Mom, Helena, and this is Morning Eclectic, and I'm here with Sean Rhodes, and last night was an actual hoot down at the Commons. We had the first karaoke night, and it's really funny because I suggested it, even though I'm not really keen on karaoke, but it was such fun that I guess I kind of like it now. And I have a lot of thank yous to say about that. I want to thank Melissa, who let us use the Commons Cafe for it, and also to the Family Repertory Theater Company. They came and they lent some of their beautiful voices. And then all the people that showed, and I might be missing some people, but I just want to tell you the names I have and say big thank yous to Keith and Tom and Chastity and Kat and Liz and John and Judith and Kashmir and Claudia and Gina and Victoria and Spider. Spider is a very big hoot meeting you. But, yeah, hopefully we'll do this again in January if the powers that be and Melissa feel this is appropriate and good. But it was really fun. Wow. So what's been going on with me is I've been going back and forth to Standing Rock, happily so, and learning and loving it. And today we have two interviews. We have an interview with Joshua Tree of Red Lightning, and what's really interesting is he brought geodesic domes to Standing Rock, to the camps. A while back, he brought one to the Sacred Stone Camp, and just recently, just last month, he brought this great big one to the Oshedi Shakoni Camp, and it's so beautiful, and I'm so sorry that I didn't get the video up on time, but I will get it up on Facebook, the Earth Mum page of Facebook. That's Earth Mum, M-U-M, so you can see it, and I'll also put some pictures of it. But I think what we'll do is we'll play the interview that I did with Joshua. He's out on the West Coast, so wanting him to get up at 3 in the morning to talk to me was an effort. And also he's leaving today to go back to North Dakota. So we'll hear from Joshua, and we're going to listen to that interview now, and then we'll talk some more. All right, we are talking with Joshua Tree from Red Lightning. Joshua and I met at the Oshedi Shakoni Camp at Standing Rock.
when I was looking at this really marvelous geodesic dome and wanted to talk to the people, the person responsible for bringing it. And Joshua is part of the Red Lightning community, so wanted to hear his story, so we'll both hear it together. Hi, Joshua. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
Same here. Same here. So the geodesic domes, you've brought two to Standing Rock. There's one at the Sacred Stone Camp, and then there's the even larger one at the Ocheti Shekone Camp. How did that all begin?
You know, it really began after the Burning Man Festival this year, you know, as the more awareness was coming of the stand that's been occurring at Standing Rock. A lot of us were feeling called to participate, unclear how to do that in the way that would be most positively impactful. And so we began dialogue with members of both Sacred Stone and Southern Council Fire main camps and just spent time listening to what was needed and, you know, how we could best be supportive and how our gifts could create the most impact. What emerged out of that process is been a big call for winterization structures. Also, we brought a lot of, you know, food and winter supplies as far as Arctic sleeping gear and winter clothes. And then a big call for renewable energy. So a focus of ours is to bring solar and wind power to both of the projects that we have. And then lastly, because awareness is a real pivotal issue around Standing Rock, which has thankfully started to emerge.
Yes.
But at the time, you know, we put up a 30-foot dome called the Home Dome in Sacred Stone, which is up on the vista there as you enter the camp. But down in the main camp, we created a full village, of which the 44-foot dome is a central meeting space. And then around it, we've created guest quarters. So we have accommodations for, you know, snuggly up to 50 or so people who can stay, and then comfortably anywhere from 36 to 40 people in a combination of Kodiak tents, teepees, buffalo tents, and lotus bell tents. And we created that to really remove a logistical barrier for people who are wanting to come but may not have the ability to bring camping gear, and especially as winter comes, specifically for journalists, speakers, performers, and presenters to have the capacity to come and land in camp and have basic support so they can come in and tell the story of the historic events that are occurring there. And just one more point. So the focal point of the dome itself, though, you know, which is the heart, is to create a real warm sanctuary, a container for the community to come together, and specifically to have that powered by solar and wind. And while certainly wanting to stand with the people of Standing Rock against the pipeline and the Black Snake, also to really show what's possible, that we're creating the new paradigm. And, you know, part of at least our offering is powered by solar and wind.
You've said that so brilliantly, because that's what it is. As much as, you know, we're there and we are going for water protection, and that's the base, and we're there for Mother Earth. And part of that is this new paradigm in energy, showing that there's a different way to get our energy, that we don't have to be dependent on the oil, that you can keep it in the ground. And what you're doing really shows that, as far as bringing the solar and the wind. When I was there, you had those two huge solar panels. Do you know how much energy they put out, or what you get from them? And I also know that there are the solar heaters within the dome that provide that beautiful ambient light and also look very pretty.
Yeah, right. The infrared electric heaters create a beautiful
glow.
Warm space. You know, so the power output of the trailer is a little bit of a complicated question, because you have the input. So there's 2.85 kW of solar, and then we have two 400-watt wind turbines that flow into a large battery bank that has 1,020 amp hours that will come out of it. And then it also has a diesel backup. So it's 100% secure in the power that it can provide. But how much power comes out kind of depends on what's drawing it. if that makes sense. It's more kind of looking at the input and then what can come out.
Yeah, so like a cloudy day, you're not going to get as much.
Well, that's the great part about having wind. Even on a cloudy day, you're probably going to have wind still. So we'll still be getting it, and you get wind at night. That's one of the benefits of having it's a bi-power source coming in. Both solar and wind is the 1-2 power combo, because even when it's stormy, you'll get wind. But it's really the large battery bank is where the energy comes from, and that's what determines the reserves. So there's 1,020 amp hours of energy that can come out of the batteries.
Okay. And and the other thing is you're providing, which is great, the winter tents. And you said buffalo teepees?
They're called buffalo tents, like next-generation teepees. If you know what a shift pod is, they're somewhat similar to a shift pod, but they're in a teepee shape.
Okay. Okay. And I'm curious, because I've never camped in the winter, and it's my intention to go back. So how warm can one be in one of these tents?
There's a varied question or a varied answer. It depends on which one. And to be honest with you, we've been down there since 2 months now for the first dome. I mean, it depends on which one you're talking about. Some of the structures, specifically the Kodiaks and the buffalo tents, those are probably not going to continue to stay in the way that they are through the deep, deep winter. We haven't had a big snow at this month, so we're just going to kind of play it by ear, because as it starts getting, or probably by feel would be a better way to say it, as it starts getting to, zero and negative 20, heating those without insulation is going to be somewhat of a challenge.
Yeah.
But the teepees, the dome, we do have two more teepees that we can put up, and when those are lined, and those will probably be heated by fire more than likely rather than electricity, those will do very well out there. Cool. However, being in the open plains in the middle of a North Dakota winter is a serious endeavor, and not for the faint of heart, regardless.
Yeah. I keep looking every day, actually a couple of times a day. I'm looking at the temperatures there, and it looks like it's supposed to go down to 19 in another day or two over the evening.
There was supposed to be a big storm that was going to hit this week with the first snow. The storm went south, but the temperatures are still dropping, for sure.
And where are you now? You're in L.A. and you're going back in a day or two?
I am in Los Angeles now, and I'm leaving. We have a caravan that's going across several city stops. So we'll be leaving I'll be leaving tomorrow. The rest of the caravan is leaving on Saturday, and we'll be arriving on the 21st. The 21st we'll arrive in Standing Rock.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Your sweet little dog, Sunny, going with you?
Sunshine is going back to Standing Rock. Yes, he is. Most certainly. He's excited.
Oh, he's an awesome guy, I got to tell you. What did you find, what touched you the most about being in Standing Rock?
There's levels to it. Just speaking very personally, it's just an honor and a privilege to contribute and be in the presence of a very prophetic gathering. So many, whether these are North American Turtle Island or clear through the South, prophecies of many generations are very evident there, and we live in prophetic times in general, but it's very tangible there. And so to be there with so many, the largest tribal gathering in support of sovereign people in a sovereign land, who have been fighting a very long challenge against an oppressive system, it's inspiring and very touching and moving to just be in the presence of it, and then certainly be able to give our gifts, but bear witness to everyone else who's coming and bringing their gifts. And what a just a beautiful impact it can make when we all come together and we give fully of ourselves, what occurs. So I think at the top of the list is just the experience of being there in a very prophecy-filled time. A second component is what we already touched on, but this is my personal vision and mission life, is to quantum leap humanity in our world into a golden era of prosperity and a return to living in harmony with all life on the planet. And that's by shifting out of dark energy into being powered primarily by wind and solar. So to come there and not only offer that as part of our gift, and as I shared, the intention for the dome was to become a gathering space. And having been there, you know, the community meetings that happen mm-hmm. every morning at 9 were happening in a very rugged but dark army tent.
Yes.
You know, the community meetings have now moved there, and they're swelling to hundreds of people in the illuminated dome. They're having many council meetings there. And so for me, from a very spiritual, metaphysical, esoteric, and very tangible level, I think there's a real powerful shift for the whole community when the community is gathering under lights that are fed by sunshine versus burning petroleum. And I think that has broader implications and echo than just the one dome. You know, there's a real powerful shift in that. So that's a real priority for me as well, and something that's been very fulfilling about the whole experience.
Wow, you've put that so beautifully. You really have, both aspects of it. And yes, because, you know, I'm thinking, like, what happens? We have this sacred fire, and, you know, we're all gathered around that very often, and that's where all the announcements are made. So, you know, when it's 10 below, what happens? Where do you go? So now there is a place. Wow, what you've brought is huge. Big question for you. How did you get into geodesic domes, which are awesome, and Buckminster Fuller and everything? How did you start with that?
Yeah. I'm a huge, Bucky is definitely a hero of mine. Everything
really?
That Bucky has brought to the world. So I've been a fan of domes, and not just domes. I'm also a developer and a builder, so, mm-hmm. you know, building domes for events like this mm-hmm. Is great, but also domes is just living spaces. There's so much power and simplicity, and, you know, geodesic means great circle. And mm-hmm. so there's just a lot of just wonder in the structure itself. So I've had a long-term fascination. My personal experience with them really began this year, and our camp, the dome that is there, it's mm-hmm. called the Lightning Dome from Red Lightning, was also the heart of our camp at Burning Man this year. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that I'd raised that dome. And we actually had three other domes that went up. One was a 60-foot, a 30-foot, and a 40-foot as part of the rest of our camp. So I had a lot of dome experience at Burning Man this year. And then, of course, raising the other domes that we have here.
Mm, it's incredible. Do you have plans for more domes at camp?
It's a good question. Possibly. One of the ideas is putting up another large dome and putting like the tents that we have, the Kodiaks and the Buffalo, inside of the dome. So it would create shelters within a shelter as a possibility. That hasn't materialized, but it's potential. And since you were there, you'll see it next time. We actually put a 20-foot dome right at the entrance to the 44-foot, the Lightning Dome.
Yeah.
And we did that to create a heat lock. So you'll enter the smaller dome. You know, keep that mm-hmm. more contained, and then have the doorway to the larger dome as it gets colder to keep the wind and the snow, but also keeping the heat on the inside. And one of the beautiful things that's emerged, this will probably happen first of next week, is someone in the camp is going to build cob benches, a cob bench. There'll be two 40-foot sections that go around the big circle, and they're going to put rocket stoves in the end of them. So the rocket stoves, you know, are super efficient wood-burning stoves, but then it's going to pipe heat through a whole bench system, which will create warm seating and heating for people, and will also create radiant heat from the floor up of the dome. So that, with the infrared heaters above, is going to be it's going to be fairly cozy in the dome.
That is so excellent, because I mean, being there, wow, it is like it's the place to bring all this. And you set me straight when we were talking at camp. And I said alternative energies. And you said, no, primary energies. The renewables are primary. And you're so right.
Right.
And yeah, and I appreciate that. And what you're doing just illustrates it so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much. And it's possible that, you know, the new world is here and it's totally possible. And, you know, having been involved in this, you know, creating homes for families, and communities, the narration is that it's somewhere off in the future that we're almost there. And my message has been really continuing. Now the future is now.
Yeah.
And the only real difference is for each individual to say, how do I get to make the personal transformation in my own life? And to move into that in a way that is, you know, balanced and appreciative of wherever anyone is at. Mm-hmm. But it's so available that in the next 5 years, everyone can make the leap, everyone, to being powered by renewable, by primary energy, mm-hmm. by the sun and by wind. Literally, it's here now. And, that didn't really happen until 2 or 3 years ago. We really hit a magic space, and now it's just sharing that message of personal responsibility,
yes.
individual transformation,
mm-hmm.
and a lot less judgment and blame on the dark energy world.
Yep.
You know, my favorite metaphor, which is really tangible, is of a caterpillar to butterfly. And, you know, we are at the zenith of the caterpillar world. And we can have a lot of judgment on it. But if you watch how caterpillars work, you know, like monarchs in the field of milkweed, the whole field is ravaged and it's suffering under the weight of the consumption and the destruction that allowed the caterpillars to grow in size and to have the mass for the transformation to occur. And rather than judge how, you know, the caterpillar world has hit its zenith, instead, just really shift into gratitude and say, like, wow, look at what big, fat, juicy caterpillars we've become, which means we can become that much better butterflies. And finishing the metaphor, mm-hmm. you know, the butterfly then comes and restores life to the same field that was ravaged. And it goes from flower to soulmate flower, making love to it, pollinating it, dipping its proboscis in, and, you know, sipping on the delicate nectar that comes out of, you know, that whole process that comes through. So it's personal transformation that's available to all of us now. And it's a time of great hope and inspiration as we shepherd the new dawn.
It is, and it's so eloquently put, Joshua, and it's so interesting and so wonderful, and I guess it's no mistake that so much of it is coming from Standing Rock, and also the domes being circular, and the circular way of life with the native way of life, and with the native dwellings, the teepee being circular. And triangular mm-hmm. in a way, too. I mean, it all just is starting to fit in, and it's making sense, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, the traditional structures and values, that whole thing I was just speaking about, yeah, it is a new earth,
mm-hmm.
but it comes from us remembering where we come from and remembering who we really are.
Yeah.
And there's so much value in traditional culture
mm-hmm.
and tribal heritage
mm-hmm.
and certainly the structures, like you said. When you saw the big windstorm out at Standing Rock that wiped mm-hmm. out 80% of the super expensive tents, but
yeah.
the teepees were doing great.
Yep.
Because
yep.
they do really good. Yeah, they do really well. And domes do good too.
Yeah, it's walking backwards into the future. And now it's all of us acknowledging that these people, the first peoples of the lands, are the people that need to be the leaders. And then, you know, someone like you comes in who's, you know, studied about Bucky and geodesic domes and the renewables, and then putting those two together, well, boy, that's a can't-lose situation.
Absolutely, right?
Mm,
it's a
yeah.
fusion of a...
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, walking backwards in the future.
Yeah.
Perfect way to put it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we are, because it's honoring those ways, learning from them, and partnering with and listening and being humble, and, you know, yeah, and that's what's going to make the difference for us all. And, you know, I don't know where it's going to end. you know, if we've gone way past the tipping point or not. I can't say, but I still feel good, and I see light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I'm not sure what do you mean by the tipping point.
Well, you know, if we've really done so much damage to Mother Earth, that we can get back into a place of balance, real balance. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, like I said, we're hitting the zenith of the bat. The mm-hmm. caterpillar is there. What I always like to do to really ground that, because when you try and take it from the global perspective,
mm-hmm.
hold on one second.
Hi, sunshine.
When you take it from the global perspective, mm-hmm. It can be overwhelming, and how are we going to get there?
Yeah.
But if everyone can just say, well, wow, look at my life, my home, my transportation system, my community,
mm-hmm.
that can all change now, totally. And that means my air is pure. My water is clean, right?
Mm-hmm.
My land
mm-hmm.
is fertile. And if everyone just does that,
yeah,
it'll be taken care of.
Yeah.
And many hands creates for light lifting. It's, if you were there for the dome raising, it's a huge 2,500-pound dome. But when you get 60 people or 40 people around it, they just put two hands, and it goes up really easy because we all lift together in our own way. So I think the big problem, you know, gets really simplified when we just take it on ourselves, and a lot less judgment and blame on how bad it is,
mm-hmm,
and instead of
mm-hmm.
responsibility of how good can I make it for me and my family, for my community, and then inspire everyone else to follow along, and we'll get it taken care of. It's happening.
Good way to look at it. Really good. I thank you for this time. Do you have any last words or any information you want to get out?
It's a huge time of awareness, and we definitely had a shift in that, and it continued for everyone to stand with Standing Rock, and certainly that's people who want to come and stand and
mm-hmm.
be there in the experience, to stand, you know, through spreading the word and calling attention to their friends and family,
mm-hmm.
or just standing spiritually inside.
Yep.
And I think there's a big breakthrough that we didn't touch on it in the beginning, but what's happening there is, you know, this is a sovereign nation with free people who are standing peacefully and prayerfully against an oppressive system that we're all responsible for and we're all dealing with. And so we can all just stand very strong with Standing Rock in prayer and peacefully, you know, shining our light and love to this community. And by doing so, we're empowering ourselves in the world to bring forth this new world that we've been talking about.
I thank you so much. I mean, I've had to do so little in this interview because your words are really magical and beautiful. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate all that you've done and what you bring to Standing Rock and what you bring to Mother Earth and all of us. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure and honor speaking with you, and we're doing it. Everyone have a beautiful day.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That was Joshua of Red Lightning, and what he's brought to Standing Rock is really incredible. The geodesic domes are gorgeous. And I particularly like what he was saying, that we're at the zenith of this caterpillar world, and I don't even want to talk about the election because it's ad nauseum. However, I mean, it's just something else to get through and roll with and get to the other side of. Everything's going to be all right. How? It's a mystery. That's actually my favorite line from the film Shakespeare in Love, because they'd be going, the world would be just falling apart, their world at the Globe in Elizabethan England, and everything's going to be all right. The play must go on, and you know how, it's a mystery. But sometimes it is a mystery. We just keep going, doing our best, and I would ask you all to really pray for the water protectors, pray for everyone at Standing Rock, because it's the most incredible place to be, but they're out there with the elements now, and it's getting colder and colder. And that's no small task. I mean, you know, we in New York know what it's like to be out in the cold, but we don't know what it's like to be out in the cold 24/7. It's a whole other ball game. You know, I was just there when it would be freezing in the morning hours and there would be frost on the tent, and I was pretty cold. But that's going to be warm compared to what's coming and probably what's there right now. The other thing is call the White House, 202-456-1111, and tell them no Dakota Access Pipeline. The biggest thing, though, you can do is keep praying for them and actually pray for the corporates, too. Pray for the Dakota Access Pipeline and also these the people in office in North Dakota. They need our prayers probably even more than the water protectors because they're just so off track with everything. So just pray for the highest and best. And with that, you are listening to WBAI New York. We're 99.5 on your FM dial, and we're WBAI.org online. And right now we're going to go to a song by Neil Young called Mother Earth, and it's a live version of it.
It's a little hymn here for the Canadians. Him for Canada. Your fields of green, once more laid down by the hungry hand. How long can you give and not receive and feed this world? Summer sky, your healing light, your parade of days, are they betrayed by the men of power who hold this world? Changing hands, they hold the world in their changing to the streets where the numbers grow. Respect Mother Earth and her healing ways. Don't trade away our children's day.
That was Neil Young with Mother Earth, and we opened the show, as we usually do, with a compilation of 6 O'Clock by the Lovin' Spoonful and Hello, Bonjour by Michael Franti and Spearhead. Right now, we're going to go to, and I'm Earth Mom, which I never announce enough. It's like, who is this woman? It's Earth Mom, and a.k.a. Helena, and you're listening to Morning Eclectic. I'm going to go to a soundbite and a clip that we did in Standing Rock with Navajo artist Antoinette Thompson. We spoke briefly, and then Antoinette's been really kind to get up way early, and she's going to talk to us in person. But we were talking to her at the Northern Camp, which was the treaty camp before, right after it was put up and that before it got torn down by the police in that incident. But, yeah, we're going to go to that now and talk to Antoinette and then come back and talk to her in person. Monday, October 24th, North Dakota. We're at the new camp. This is Earth Mom, and I'm with Antoinette Thompson. And Antoinette is with the Navajo Nation, came up from Four Corners to be here. And Antoinette, what brought you here, and what's been your experience, and what do you make about what's happening right now?
Yeah, I've been out here for about a day and a half, going on 2 days, and what I've noticed and what I've witnessed is it's a peaceful gathering of people who are about Mother Earth, who are about protecting the water, protecting what's sacred, protecting what's natural in the world. We have the agreed corporations on the other side of both hills with cops and rifles just playing their games against us. That's what I see, and that's what I've noticed, and that's what I've witnessed being here. I've had the opportunity to talk to Joy, one of the first settlers here at the Sacred Camp, Sacred Stone Camp. Now we're set up at a new campsite where the pipeline is supposedly to run through, but yesterday they declared right to this land, so Lakota is taking over their own land. But it's a game that the cops are playing, it's the game that the corporations are playing, it's a game that the Dakota pipelines are playing against natives, against peaceful protectors. There's nothing going on here. There's prayers and drums and singing and laughter and humor on the campsites. That's all there is. There's no weapons, there's no violence, there's no trespassing in any way. It's just nothing but people protecting what Mother Earth is. And you have all these cops trying to invade, trying to stir things up, staging things. And it's not a pretty thing what they're doing. Because we're all about Mother Earth, we're all about protecting the water, we're all about preserving what we have left, and that's what we're fighting for, that's what we're protecting. But for some reason, the corporation, the cops, they're trying to twist things on us, and there's nothing absolutely violent and hostile about this environment.
I thank you very much, and that's really the truth. And it's very interesting that this new campsite right now is directly on the site of the pipeline. One person was telling me that his teepee he saw underneath, it was marked DAPL. So this is sort of the last stand. This is where it all happens. Out for now. We'll keep you updated.
Thank you so much.
And that was Antoinette, and that was the wind, too. That was also part of that interview, because I guess in North Dakota, the wind is part of everything. It's really funny. I'm crazy for the wind, and boy, I've got plenty of it. Could never complain about it, though, because it just, I love it. Antoinette is on the line with us now, and I want to talk to her about her art and also about Standing Rock and her life. And Antoinette, thank you so much. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you. Can
hey,
you hear
Antoinette,
me?
You there? I can't hear her. I don't know what's going on.
Can you hear me?
Hang on a minute. We're just, Antoinette, if you're talking, I can't hear you. So hang on. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I'm right here.
Hang on, let's change. There we go.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
It's middle of the night for you.
It's okay.
Thank you so much for doing this. Yeah, I was looking at your website and looking at your beautiful artwork, too. And
thank you.
Yeah, you've got a pretty good story, don't you?
Yeah, I guess you could say my story's pretty good.
Yeah, because when we met, you're a very young woman, you're very accomplished, just well-spoken and so put together. And how long have you been working on your art?
I've been working on my art for about 6 years.
Uh-huh.
6 years, yeah.
Wow. And did you start on that right after high school, or?
No, well, I've been sketching a lot since I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And I went through some rough times, went through some hard times, and I came out of it. And at the end of all the hard times, I needed to pick up something that was more positive. But painting has always been in my life, and I just started painting about 6, going on 7 years, actually. And I just recently did a live performance with a jazz band and a symphony last weekend. And, of course, I went back to school. So today, this morning, I want to be walking for my master's degree.
Oh, congratulations. That is so awesome. And it said you're an abstract artist, but I was looking. It looks like you do stuff that isn't abstract as well. It's both?
Yeah. I dabble in a lot of different areas in my art. I do abstract art. I do portraits. I just do whatever I can that makes the day go by, because I believe art is a form of expression, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's beautiful stuff. What mediums do you usually work in?
Acrylic. Mm-hmm. I use acrylic paint. And most of the time I use acrylic and aerosol spray paint.
Nice. Were you inspired by being at Standing Rock with, you know, work that you've done after?
Not in the art form, no. My inspiration for Standing Rock is completely different. It's that being at Standing Rock has affected me in my life, in my direction, and my culture more than my art.
Can you expand upon that? How so?
Well, I'm native. I'm Navajo from the Navajo Reservation, the Four Corners of Arizona.
Mm.
And when I say it inspired me to be more native.
Mm-hmm.
It inspired me to drive more for education, for career. And it hasn't really affected my art yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it will eventually, but right now it's really hit the aspect of being Native American, being Navajo.
Yeah, I would imagine that it must make you feel so proud to be who you are, and in a humble way, not like, hey, look at me, but what you bring to the table, what you all bring to the table as keepers of Mother Earth and understanding Mother Earth. You know, maybe more so than the rest of us?
It has, because I can't remember since I was a kid, my grandma and my mother telling me that take care of Mother Earth, you know, respect your culture, remember your culture, remember your language, remember certain ceremonies, remember certain words, and being up in Standing Rock and coming back to, I guess, modern reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're in Standing Rock, you're in a whole different world.
Yeah.
It kind of takes you back to when your ancestors was fighting for their land. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like for me. And coming back here to modern reality, it's really made me think about my culture. It's really made me think about my language and the just being Native American, understanding what being Native American is, especially today, right now, with everything that's going on. It's made me that much more stronger and that much more proud to have brown skin, to talk a different language, to come from this land which belongs to the Native Americans.
I'm happy for you. And it's so
Thank
true.
You.
Yeah, I really am happy for you because, you know, we all respect that, and, you know, the collective all, but many of us really do respect that. And respect and what you've gone through and feel bad about that. But right now, gosh, you're more important than ever. Do you speak your language, or are you inspired now to learn it if you don't speak it?
Navajo was my first language. My parents still tell me how cute it was me speaking language when I was so little. Mm-hmm. They said that's all you spoke was Navajo. And then I grew up, went to school, and English is my second language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you find when you think, you're thinking more in Navajo, or?
Yeah. I mean, the language has slowly been trying to be dissipated, you know? It's been slowly trying to be forgotten. But because it's so beautiful and it's so powerful, and I had no idea how beautiful and powerful it was until I've actually lived in Phoenix, traveled the country, went to New York, mm-hmm. went to Los Angeles, Portland, Washington, all these different places. It made me realize how beautiful and powerful my language is, and I've been speaking it more and more, and I've never forgotten about it. To this day, I speak it as much as I can at restaurants, with my kids, with my nieces and nephews, mm-hmm. with other people that know how to speak Navajo.
Oh, that is really cool. Gosh, and you got to let us know if you come to New York, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm planning on being in New York in April.
Oh, cool.
Next year.
Cool. So, you know, we can get together on that. And if you're doing an art show, then we can announce it and things like that.
Yeah, I'm going to be in New York for an art show. And as soon as I get all the information and details, I'll let you know.
Oh, good. Wow. Do you plan on going back to Standing Rock? Oh, I know. Wait, you did have plans to go back, right? But the snowstorm sort of stopped that at the moment?
No, it wasn't the snowstorm. I actually hit a deer a couple of days ago, so it put my vehicle in the shop.
Ew.
And it pushed my plans to go to Standing Rock. It pushed it back. But eventually I will go back.
Good. Wow. Just thinking out loud.
I do need to go back. No, I was just saying that I do need to go back because they need a lot of people up there. They need a lot of support, especially with the elections. And apparently Trump is our president. It's gotten a little bit stronger. It's gotten a little bit harder. And they do need a lot of people up there for support.
Yeah, I want to go back too. I just, I guess we'll all deal with the cold and find ways to deal with it and to stay warm. But being part of that,
I was just going to say that a lot of people have been showing up recently because of all the media and publicity that it's been getting, and especially with the Dakota Pipeline pushing and threatening, and with all the violence that they have been doing on the protesters or mm-hmm. with the protectors, it's gotten a lot of attention that more people are actually going to Standing Rock to stand with the protectors. And the local casino has been completely booked.
So I've heard. Yeah.
I'm so happy. I hate it that it has to get there the way it got there with
right.
all the violence from Dakota Pipeline. But I'm just so happy that people are finally seeing and hearing about this.
Yeah, it finally has gotten out, and like it, more and more and more people are talking about it, and it was a slow start. And yeah, you're right that it's gotten out because of how bad it's been. I mean, when you and I were talking, we were at the North Camp, the Treaty Camp of 1851. It had just been up for a day or two, and you left, and then each day there was always an action to be there because this was, there was the threat of the police and the guard coming to tear the camp down and take it away. And that happened finally one day, just a few more days after that. I think it was on the 28th or 29th of October. And
yeah, it was like a Thursday.
Yeah, it was a Thursday. And, you know, the day before, it looked really close, but that was the day that Reverend Jesse Jackson was there, and he actually, and we were all on 1806 outside that camp, and he came and he shook the hand of every water protector. And it was also the day Mark Ruffalo was there. Mark Ruffalo came with some Navajo people, and he brought some two solar energy trucks. You know,
yeah, my friend from Kienta, Doug Yazzie, actually brought some solar panels for the people to use, and Mark Ruffalo just brought in more power.
Mm-hmm.
And I left a day early, and I regret leaving a day early, not because of Mark Ruffalo, not because of Jesse James, but because I wanted to be there to fight with my people, you know?
Yeah.
And as soon as I leave, everything happened. And if it happened while I was still there, I would have still been there today.
Well, you know, you don't know. Sometimes things happen for a reason. And one thing that I think going to Standing Rock's made me see, sometimes I have to, like, let my hands off the wheel. And it's kind of creator and spirit that drives everything. And I know sometimes when I push for things, they don't happen. But when I let everything be, they begin to fall into place. It was just like the story of my getting there. I was so involved emotionally, mentally with Standing Rock and would so wanted to be there, but I couldn't see any way to go. And then just different modes of transportation and different opportunities opened up like magic. There's one set of circumstances that I've been trying for 2 years just as far as traveling. And then all of a sudden in one day it turned around. So sometimes I think creator and spirit's got the bigger picture. And, you know,
I believe that. I totally believe that.
Yeah.
And because as much as I wanted to go back, it, whatever this spirit or guidance stopped me from going back because I hit a deer at the last minute. And, but I do want to go back.
Yeah.
And when it's time for me to go back, I'll go back.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, a lot of people where you are, is everyone, like, really involved and really keeping on top of it?
Since I've gone up there and I explained my purpose and my reason for going up there, I think they've grasped the idea of what is going on. Mm-hmm. You know, they looked into it a little bit more and they understand it a little bit more and they're more passionate about it. My family was kind of on the edge of why I went there. But when I told them my purpose of going up there and all the talks my grandma did and the talks that my uncle does, talking about preserving Mother Earth, talking about protecting Mother Earth, the land, the mountains, the water, everything. And I was telling them, this is what grandma used to talk about. This is what our uncle talks about. This is why we have to fight. This is why we have to protect, because eventually they're going to come. They're going to come, even though it's in North Dakota, even though it's in Standing Rock. If they win there, they're going to come here on the Navajo Reservation, and they're going to take our mountain, and they're going to destroy our beautiful mountain. That's why I went up there. It wasn't for publicity. It wasn't something cool to do. It was something that I was truly passionate about, something I truly understand, something that my grandma told me and my uncle told me that has been in my head and in my heart for so long that I finally did something about it. And I'm a green person. I'm a total green person. I'm about Mother Earth.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We have like about 30 seconds, but so many of the Native people that I've spoken with there, you know, will tell me, yeah, this is what my grandmother taught me, what my grandfather taught me. And that's
exactly,
yeah, it's a beautiful part about your culture that you grow up with that learning and loving Mother Earth and understanding. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I mean, they fought for it, so it's our turn to fight for it. And this has gone on for 500 years,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and hopefully now you got more allies, and together, you know, we'll follow you and you'll do it. We've got to go, but before we do, you want to tell everybody your website so they can see some of your beautiful work?
Yeah, I'm a Navajo abstract expression artist. My website is AntoinetteThompsonsArt.com. You can actually Google A.ThompsonsArt and it'll pop up in. Go on the website, check it out, support a Native artist, and I do a lot of donations. I do a lot of help, and I'm actually doing a painting for the ASU school, mm-hmm. Arizona State University, mm-hmm. and it's about the North Dakota pipeline, so it's going to be promoted in a little bit, and it's all for auction.
Awesome. Well, be well. Thank you for getting up crazy early to be with us. Maybe you haven't
gone to sleep yet.
Thank you. And I'll see you here or there or somewhere.
Eventually we'll see each other again.
Yep.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Well, that's it for this show. Be well, everybody. We'll see you next week, and we're going to go out with Wind by Circus Maximus. Sean Rhodes for engineering. And thank you, everybody, that came out to the karaoke night. It was really fun, and going to check with the powers that be about doing it again. Thank you, Marvin, Camille, Valentine, and everyone at the Family Rep Company for coming and lending your gorgeous voices to. And keep those prayers up for Standing Rock, for the Dakota Access Pipeline people, and always pray for those water protectors. They're out there in the cold, and they're out there for us, because if they're there for Mother Earth, they're for all of us. I mean, no clean air, no clean water. There's no game at all. So lots of love, everybody.
The more you go to nowhere, ask a bird as she flies by just where she's at, and she says where the wind blows.